Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Queso de los Muertos by Nova Nelson, narrated by Rebecca Mitchell. Chapter 1. The breakfast rush was running itself out, making way for the impending Monday lunch rush at medium rare, when Deputy Stu Manchester slogged in. I almost laughed at the friendly jingle of the bell above the door in contrast to his haggard appearance, which was, I should say, not that much more haggard than it had been for the past 7 weeks. "Miss Ashcroft," he said hoarsely, sliding up onto a stool at the counter, adjusting his laden deputy belt as he did. I set his coffee and cherry pie in front of him and waited. Once he stirred in sugar and took his first bite of pie, his rigid shoulders rounded, and he sighed. Then he did exactly what I'd expected him to do. He gave me the scoop. "Still no sign of the gold." Should Eastwind's only deputy be divulging the progress of the missing gold reserves with me, the new witch in town who runs a diner in the sketchy outskirts neighborhood? Pretty sure not. But who was going to get mad at him, Sheriff Bloom? She was too busy digging her way free of an avalanche of paperwork at any given moment to reprimand him for playing a little fast and loose with the investigation. Besides, what was she going to do? Fire the only other law enforcement officer in the town? Not likely. "And no suspects?" I asked. He laughed humorlessly.
"No, the opposite. Too many suspects. It could be anyone in this town."
Then he lowered his voice and added,
"Well, except for you, Donovan, and Grimm."
"Nice to know I've been ruled out," I said, just as quietly. The reason Manchester had ruled out the three of us was something I didn't want making its way into the main arteries of Eastwind's gossip channels, because it had to do with an encounter Stu and I had never outright talked about and had only ever acknowledged in tight-lipped innuendo in our daily chats. It went back to our brush with one another in the Deadwoods while Donovan Grimm and I were tracking the drought god who'd been terrorizing Eastwind, and Stu was out for a little R&R, galloping through the woods in his elk form. Though the deputy had paused in the clearing and bowed his large, antlered head at us, we hadn't bothered to explain ourselves, and he hadn't asked. Not that he could when he had elk lips. The following day, when he'd entered medium rare for his usual post-shift coffee and pie, he'd nodded, saying, "Miss Ashcroft," then quickly added,
"I believe I understand what yesterday was about, and thank you for handling that particular disturbance. Also, thank you in advance for your discretion."
Ridiculous, I know. Why was Deputy Manchester embarrassed that he sometimes shifted into his elk form and ran around the Deadwoods to blow off steam? It wasn't a secret that he was a were-elk. But that was deep-seated bias for you. If you come at it logically, you'll only end up puzzled, because it's not a thing of reason. Eastwind, despite how it prided itself on acceptance and hospitality, still had a serious hang-up about shifting. Something to do with the war between the werewolves and the witches when the town was first founded. As an effect, the Deadwoods was where the were-things went to let loose. I suspected that was part of the reason it was so dangerous. A small part. There were plenty of other strange and fierce things running around there to make the forest a death trap. Deputy Manchester's assumption, then, after seeing us foolishly venturing through the most dangerous area of Eastwind, must have been that we were on his side, or doing him a favor by handling the entity that had brought intense and targeted drought to town. That way, he could focus all his efforts on cleaning up the mess over in Aaron Park, the one that resulted from the demon, God, whatever she actually was, drinking all the booze in Sheehan's pub and causing Rainbow Falls to slow to a trickle, exposing the town's gold reserves, which immediately went missing. His assumption was correct. If that got my name scratched off his list of suspects, great. With all the trouble that trip had caused, I would take whatever silver lining I could get. And if Stu Manchester had the sense not to mention to anyone else that I'd gone traipsing through the Deadwoods with an incredibly attractive man who was not the one I was dating, then Stu was all right in my book.
and I'd keep having his pie and coffee ready for him when he showed up each morning. "Just between us," Stu said around a mound of warm pie shoved into his cheek. "I think the gold is long gone, probably stashed in some connecting realm. All the gold reserves in Eastwind would be nothing more than a drop in the bucket in, say, Avalon."
"You think the person who took them is also gone?"
He sighed. "It would make sense, wouldn't it? Why send the money someplace where it's not readily available to you? That's the lead I've been following, but I haven't heard about anyone moving out of Eastwind around the time of the theft. I've even asked Blanche Bridgewater and the Flufferbum brothers."
He rolled his eyes like, "Don't ask."
"If anyone keeps up with the mundane comings and goings of Eastwind, it's them."
"Maybe you've got a smarter criminal on your hands than you think." He frowned, bobbing his head, then sipped his piping hot coffee.
"Yeah, I'm afraid that's the case. Probably stashed it until the heat dies down on the investigation. Then he or she will find some convenient excuse to leave town. The death of a relative, a made-up job opportunity. You know, something like that."
The bell above the door rang again, and I looked up to see two of the last faces I'd wanted to see today. Or ever, really. I wasn't entirely certain Lucent Lovelace and Seamus Shaw were allowed in here. If anyone had the honor of being on our no-dine list, it was those two. Surely someone, either Tanner or the former owner Bruce, had banned them. To my memory, they'd never been by medium rare before. I didn't doubt that they spent quite a bit of time causing trouble in the outskirts, which was a predominantly werewolf neighborhood, even though Lucent still lived in Hightower Gardens, Eastwind's wealthiest werewolf neighborhood and the socioeconomic antithesis of the outskirts. I'd had the privilege of avoiding Seamus Shaw for the last couple of months. The last time I'd seen the leprechaun was when he'd made a sloppy pass at me in Sheehan's pub, and Tanner had set him straight. Seamus didn't appear drunk at the moment, which struck me as odd. Never in any of the town's gossip I was subjected to on a daily basis by loyal patrons was there a mention of Seamus sober. Never mind that it was currently noon on a Monday. I'd once heard about him fighting a duck, a regular one, not a were-duck, just after sunrise on a Tuesday. I wasn't sure if "it's 5 o'clock somewhere" was a phrase Eastwind was familiar with, but regardless of if he had the words for it or not, it was a creed Seamus lived by. And strangely, one that everyone just sort of tolerated. I wondered if they knew about staging an intervention in this town. "Well, hello there, beautiful," Seamus said, leaning against the countertop on one side of Stu, with Lucent flanking the deputy on the other. I tried not to laugh at Seamus, who was hardly tall enough to peer over the counter at me. Leprechauns were sensitive about their height, or lack of it, and I didn't want to give him any reason to cause a scene. Seamus nodded at Stu. "Sorry to cut in, Manchester, but I could tell she wasn't into your flirting." I glanced at Stu, who rolled his eyes. "Probably because I wasn't flirting, Shaw. Ms. Ashcroft was simply asking me about the ongoing investigation of the missing gold reserves." "Oh, yeah?" Seamus said, perking up. "Can't do it yourself, deputy? Trying to get a woman to help you out?" Stu scrunched up his nose like he'd smelled something rotten.
"Obviously. I have women help me all the time. The sheriff of this town is a woman, if you've forgotten. Most intelligent person I know, too. Ms. Ashcroft is a close second. I'd be lucky to have her help in just about anything."
While I appreciated the compliment, I couldn't help but suspect Stu's adulation was due more to a desire to put Seamus in his place than it was a special fondness for me. Don't get me wrong. I let it go straight to my head, regardless.
"What are you two shysters doing up this early anyway?" Stu added, changing the subject. "Decide to get an early start on the day? Get a little food on your stomach to soak up last night's liquid dinner?"
Rather than trying to fight the deputy, which wasn't out of the realm of possibility, Seamus laughed and patted Stu on the back.
"You got me pegged, deputy."
Then he reached in his pocket and pulled out a small fistful of coppers, setting them on the counter.
Stu's meal is on me.
What?
Said Manchester, jerking his head back to stare down at the leprechaun.
Why? For the bang-up job you did over in Erin Park. Got the place cleaned right up and kept the rioters from destroying Sheehan's pub.
Ah, yes. Seamus's home away from home. Made sense that he would be protective of it. You know, when he wasn't busy stumbling around in it, breaking arms off the wooden chairs and sending the wall decorations crashing to the floor. I decided not to point out that Seamus's name had come up in every story I'd heard about the rioting at Sheehan's when the bar dried up. And now, Seamus continued, they're opening back up after the Lunasa Festival tomorrow, and I can get back to my routine. I owe you one. So there it is.
He nodded to the coins, then turned his eyes on me. Tanner better keep watch on you, or else someone might just snatch you up. And when us leprechauns sink our fingers into a woman, she'll never again spare a thought for the likes of a simple West Wind witch. We don't need wands to work magic.
He winked.
Ew, I said, without meaning to. That's no way to speak to her, Stu said, puffing up paternally. You leave Ms. Ashcroft alone. Hellhounds, I'll take your order myself if I have to.
Grumpy, said Lucent with a smile, like a glass shard. But then the werewolf and leprechaun stepped away from the counter and headed for a booth at the corner. Only one problem. It was already occupied.
Don't you own this place? Stu said.
Half of it.
Which half? Because if it's the front half, I suggest you kick those two no-good scoundrels out of here and tell them not to come back. The only good sense I ever saw from Echo Chambers was when he banned Seamus from Liar Lounge. You have every right to...
Shouting at the back of the diner cut him off before he could finish. If Seamus wasn't drunk, he must have been high, because only someone not in their right mind would holler at a grim reaper like he was. From everything I knew about Ted, he was a pacifist, and while I wasn't always keen on his awkward flirting, I knew he had a good heart. And no one was going to treat one of my most loyal customers that way. I yanked off my apron, tossing it onto the counter, ready in case this turned into a schoolyard brawl, and stomped over toward the trouble.
But I always sit here,
said Ted calmly from his seat on the shiny red booth. His book, which he'd been quietly reading before Seamus approached, was open and face down on the table. Ted may have appeared calm and collected to anyone who happened not to notice that his gloved hands gripped the handle of his sickle, which rested across his lap.
Always except today, said Seamus,
standing a pace ahead of Lucent, whose arms were crossed as he leered over the leprechaun's head with a silent scowl. Seamus Shaw, I said, closing the distance in a few long steps. There are open tables all over the place. I suggest you take one of those or find another place to eat. He turned toward my voice and sneered as his eyes crawled up and down my body.
Ah, I see it now. Tanner lets you think you run this place, but I know a lass who could use some taming when I see one.
I opened my mouth to shut down whatever twisted fantasy was forming in Seamus's head when a sudden dark movement caught my eye. Ted stood quickly from his booth, his sickle still gripped firmly in both hands, and slammed the end of the handle down on the linoleum floor. A shockwave rolled out from it, one I couldn't see or hear, but could feel ripple through me. Dread, bone-chilling dread, like everything I'd ever feared was about to pounce on me from behind. And then, in a blink, it was gone. At least for me, it was. It didn't seem to work that way for everyone, though. The handful of other diners in medium rare leapt out of their seats and sprinted from the restaurant, not screaming exactly, but making low wailing noises that were somewhere between a moan and a shout. While Seamus and Lucent appeared more reticent to show their fear, they too skedaddled, and the bell above the door whipped back and forth, ringing like a fire station alarm as everyone left. Except for me, Ted, Deputy Manchester, and Grimm.
My familiar pushed through the double doors connecting the kitchen to the dining area and padded over. He'd undoubtedly decided to sleep by Anton's feet today, hoping the ogre line cook would drop a morsel here and there, sometimes by accident, and sometimes just feigning accident. He had a soft spot for Grimm, which I suspected had something to do with the fact that he couldn't hear my familiar's thoughts like I could.
"What the jumpin' jackalope just happened? I've never felt so alive. Life has never felt so full of endless, beautiful possibility," he said, communicating telepathically to me like he always did.
"Care to explain?" said Deputy Manchester, wiping a splotch of cherry from his mustache as he dismounted the stool and approached the epicenter of the shockwave. The Grim Reaper bowed his hooded head like a chastened child.
"Sorry, Nora. I didn't mean to run off all your customers. I can cover their walked tabs."
"More like sprinted tabs," I said, then waved him off. "Don't worry about that. You were standing up for me. Consider us even. But seriously, Ted, what was that?" He shifted uncomfortably from foot to foot, his bones rubbing together like pieces of chalk.
"Just a trick I learned for work. Sometimes when I come to collect a body, everyone's so sad and dramatic, throwing themselves on top of the corpse and so on, that I can't get them out of the way. If I pound the edge of my sickle on the ground like this..."
He made to do it again, but I reached forward and grabbed the handle so I didn't have to experience the same wave of dread. However, the handle felt repulsive in my grip, like holding a thick, ice-cold snake, and I immediately released it and recoiled. Ted got the point.
"Oh, sorry. Doesn't affect me the same, so I forget how potent it can be. Anyway, you saw the effect. Sort of clears a room."
"Sure does," I said, forcing a smile.
"Hey," he said, straightening up. "I bet you could do something like it, Nora. It's just death magic, after all. You're a death witch."
"Fifth wind witch," I corrected.
"And I bet if you got a sickle..."
"Nope," I said. My funds were still recovering from the custom-made wad Ezra Ares had delivered to me a month ago, and that I had yet to learn to use. "Not the sickle type of girl."
"Tell Ted I will help him build his fireproof birdhouses if he does that death magic again."
"Not a chance, Grimm. For one, you don't have opposable thumbs, so I doubt your woodworking ability. But also, you know where he lives. You have my blessing to head into the Deadwoods on a day trip to visit Ted any time you want."
"You know I can't go back there for a while. What if Ocker Lake is still low? Those hellhounds will have my hide. The only reason I'm not dead already is that nothing, and I mean nothing, could convince a hellhound to leave the safety of the Deadwoods."
Safety and Deadwoods were not two words I would pair, but okay. "What about if that hellhound dies, is reborn as a Grimm, then turns into a Fifth Wind Witch's familiar?"
"Okay, so maybe in that case, but probably nothing else."
Officer Manchester cleared his throat.
"So, as long as it's nice and quiet in here, Ms. Ashcroft, I think I might stay a while longer and enjoy another slice of pie."
"Sure thing, Stu." I turned to Ted. "You need a refill on your coffee?" He lowered into the booth again.
"Yes, that would be great. And again, sorry about, you know, running everyone off."
"Don't worry about it," I said. "It actually gives me more time to work on my recipe for tomorrow." I grabbed the coffee pot and topped up Manchester's cup before moving to Ted's.
"This is your first Lunasa Festival in Eastwind, right?"
the Grim Reaper asked. "In Eastwind, or anywhere else."
"Oh, Nora,"
Ted said, his dry voice cracking with excitement.
"You're going to have a great time. Everyone is there."
"Are you going?" I said, turning to Stu.
"Wouldn't miss it."
I served him up another piece of pie and told them to holler at me if they needed anything, or, heck, just help themselves to it. They knew where everything was, and both were good for the money. Then I grabbed my apron off the counter, tied it back on, and headed to the kitchen to work on my top-secret recipe for the Lunasa cook-off. Chapter 2. There is nothing quite like hot, creamy queso. When done right, the corn chips become entirely unnecessary, and eating it with a spoon is preferable, even if it's not socially acceptable. The possible repercussions of introducing Eastwind to queso was something I'd considered fully. To be honest, I'd probably considered it more than a sane person would. But my love for good chips and queso burdened me with a responsibility of being the best liaison I could, so that the town's first impression of the appetizer was what it ought to be. And viva la queso revolucion! If you're not from Texas, you might not understand the fuss I'm making. But if you are, you know the sensation of immediate relaxation that overtakes your body when you scoop that first bite of gooey white queso into your mouth on a perfectly salted corn tortilla chip. Honestly, I feel a little dirty just talking about it. The time was ripe to bring the light of melted cheese to the magical realm of Eastwind. And from everything I'd heard, if I wanted to make a real splash, the unveiling should take place at the Lunasa Festival's annual cook-off. I had no doubt I would win by a landslide, and then there would be crowds lining up around the block. Not the safest thing in the outskirts, but what can you do? To get into medium rare the following day, to get their first taste of the award-winning appetizer. As I hunched over the large cauldron in the kitchen of medium rare, stirring the melted cheese, carefully adding in the sprinkle of chili powder, the fresh-made pico de gallo, monitoring the heat to make sure the cheese didn't burn, I heard someone enter through the back door. I already knew who it was. Tanner had left an hour earlier to pick up more bacon from the butcher, and I'd figured that as soon as he'd returned, he'd be trying to get a taste of the goods. But then I heard the back door open and shut again, and 5 minutes later, he came back inside and did just what I'd expected him to do in the first place, making a beeline for me. At the sound of his footsteps, I asked, "Did you forget something?" "What do you mean?" I glanced over my shoulder at him. Good Gaia, he was a sight for sore eyes. "You came in, then you left, then you came back. Did you forget something?" He shook his head, pouting out his bottom lip. "Nope. Just got here. Came straight for the queso." "Why?" I waved him off. "I just thought..." "Never mind." I returned my attention to the queso, and when an arm reached over my shoulder toward the cauldron, I swatted it away. "Seriously, Tanner, you'll get a taste at the festival. But if you stick your finger in it now, all you'll get is a first-degree burn." He pulled his arm away and ran his hands down my sides as he pressed close behind me. "But it smells so good. You've been teasing me with it all week." I tapped the spoon clean and set it aside before turning to face him. For a moment, my breath caught. We'd been officially together for about 2 months, but still, I kind of couldn't believe my eyes every time I looked at him and thought, this guy is into me. Normally, when I had that thought at medium rare, the next thought was, and he's also my boss. But quick on the heels of that was, and I'm his boss, and his business partner. Yeah, it's convoluted, but personal justifications for doing whatever we darn well please usually are. In short, I worked as a waitress at Medium Rare, and Tanner was my manager. But we also both co-owned the place. It didn't hurt that Eastwind's social expectations were more loosey-goosey when it came to who dated whom. Part of being a small town and having limited options, I supposed. Or at least, in theory, the options were limited. Yet, I'd been in town only half a year, and things had already become complicated in the dating department. No, scratch that. They weren't complicated. They were quite simple. I was with Tanner. Donovan Stringfellow was complicated, but I wasn't with him, nor would I ever be. I'd closed the door on that the moment I'd kissed Tanner in the middle of medium rare. Blood soaking my shirt, my hair in tangles from having fought off an evil spirit in the Deadwoods, and from Donovan's fingers clutching it while he'd kissed me. Nope, not dwelling on that. It was a mistake, an error made with judgment blurred by the connection ritual he and I had just performed. Tanner took advantage of his status as my boyfriend and lowered his head, pressing his lips to mine. I tried to focus on it so I didn't feel like a complete jerk. Then I gently pushed him away. The queso is going to burn if you get me distracted, and then there goes our whole plan for realm domination.
Mmm, he said, his eyelids heavy with lust. King and queen of the diners. I do like the sound of that.
He stretched, groaning as he did, and then leaned against the counter next to the cauldron, staring at me.
Before I forget, any reason why Anton is nowhere to be found, and it's just afternoon, but the only two people in the dining room are Stu and Ted?
Yep, there's a reason.
Care to elaborate?
Nah, not really.
He grunted. Okay, let me try this again. Would you please elaborate?
I shrugged and scraped the edges where the cheese was starting to stick. Seamus came in and was being Seamus, and Ted got tired of it and banged his sickle against the floor and sent everyone running in fear with some death spell.
Oh, said Tanner. Huh. Okay.
After a moment of silent nodding, he added,
Well, Seamus is definitely banned from this place.
Works for me. I tapped the spoon on the side of the cauldron and turned to face him. He rubbed his chin and squinted at nothing as he said,
I don't know how he wasn't banned before now.
Yeah, me neither. Don't worry about it. No harm done. And actually, it gives us a little alone time. I snuck a flirty glance at him and turned off the heat under the cauldron. A gorgeous half-grin tugged at the corner of his lips.
We'll have plenty of alone time tomorrow. After the festival, that is.
When was the last time you actually closed medium rare for an entire day? I asked. He considered it, narrowing his eyes and staring up at the ceiling as he ran a hand over his head from back to front.
I guess when we found Bruce's body.
Oh, right. That was the day we met, I said.
Don't go getting all sentimental on me, Nora Ashcroft.
Ah, yes. That glorious day when I died, crossed over into a new realm, discovered that werewolves were a thing by finding a murdered one, was accused of murdering said werewolf, was told I was actually a witch, and was visited by the ghost of the murdered werewolf. There's a day I wish I could relive over and over again. His half-grin spread into a full crescent. He loved when I gave him sass.
As I said, don't go getting all sentimental.
He pushed off from the counter and returned a moment later with two eggs and a frying pan. Perfect. I could go for a snack.
Over medium?
He asked before lighting the stove. You know it.
The High Council will love it, Nora. I guarantee we're going to win.
The judges of the Lunasa cook-off were none other than Eastwind's High Council, the people who ran the town, or at least wanted everyone to believe they ran the town. I'd been here for months and only met two of the seven in person. Was I a little stressed out about the queso being perfect because I wanted my first impression to be good? No, not at all. But seriously, Count Sebastian Malevich, a vampire who acted like he owned the world and everyone in it, with his air of superiority and frustratingly sexy Eastern European accent, was the town treasurer and held a seat on the council. So, yeah, it would feel pretty incredible to make him admit that my entry was the best. I tended to avoid competitions because I'm not that competitive, But I was all in on this one and would be happy with nothing less than a unanimous vote that my chips and queso were the best thing to come to Eastwind since long before the witches ever...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?